So if I was to give the talk a name, it would be Cultivating a Kind and Steady Mind as the Climate Crisis Unfolds. The latest report in Biosphere, signed by 11,000 scientists, states, the world's people face untold suffering due to the climate crisis. We declare clearly and unequivocally that the planet Earth is facing a climate emergency. To secure a sustainable future, we must change how we live. And this entails major transformations in the way our global society functions and interacts with natural ecosystems. Kate Marvel in Scientific America, July 2019, said, the scariest thing about climate change is what it will make us do to each other. So we need to become like the keepers of a well, a big pool of beautiful water that people can come and drink from. And we'll put the dipper in and we'll give them water and we'll give it to everyone that comes. And we'll do it with a calm mind, and it will replenish them, and it will ease their suffering. That's what we need to do with this climate crisis. We have to be those people that will keep a calm and steady mind, that will not discriminate who comes to the well, and will just give them water. And we'll just do it over and over and over. So some of you probably know that I've been involved with Extinction Rebellion in Santa Cruz. It's kind of a climate action organization that's started in London, has gone global. And over the months, I've had a lot of conversations with people, and these are the people who are willing to look at the details, willing to look at how difficult the situation is, often compromising their own livelihoods and their own comfort to bear witness and look at the truth and not be distracted. It's very hard for us to put long-term needs ahead of short-term needs. So we're kind of being called to do that right now. It's very hard. It's very hard for me. I keep dealing with my short-term needs, and that's humbling. So in the conversations I've had with a lot of those people, I've noticed that I've kind of made this little constellation of, I don't know if you'd say it's advice exactly, maybe it's sort of like guiding principles, something like that, something that might be helpful. And they've come up for me because our Bodhisattva vow is just this, it's got immense vision and scope, the vow that we chant, which we'll do at the end of this evening. It's like this well. You can just keep drinking at the well of the Bodhisattva vow. And in that vow we say beings are numberless, and we say that we will save them. So the beings are numberless, and we vow to save them. The delusions are inexhaustible, and we vow to end them. The Dharma gates are boundless, and we vow to enter them. And Buddha's way is unsurpassable, and we vow to become it. So that's had so much impact on me over the years, and I noticed as I was talking with people who were having feelings coming up, so feelings of anger or frustration, overwhelm, maybe sometimes even kind of patronizing feelings, like what's wrong with everybody? Why can't they wake up? And people knowing that that's not very wholesome for them to be thinking that way, I found myself kind of coming up with a list. So I thought I'd share that with you. I think I'm a little better at making my own list than memorizing lists. So the first thing on that list, and they're not in any particular order really, but to expect difficulties to keep arising. We should just do that in life in general. And in any kind of service work that we're doing, just expect difficulties to keep arising. They're not going to stop arising sometime. They're just not going to. It doesn't matter how skillful we are or how much we want them to stop arising. They'll just keep arising. They might be mundane. They might be repetitive. They might be surprising. They might be frightening. They're just going to keep arising. And we just need to keep meeting them. I have this little phrase that I use when a new difficulty arises. I say, ah, of course. And it's not a sort of a cynical of a course. Of course, it's not like, of course, there they go again. It's not that kind of a of course. It's just a real gentle, ah, of course. I took the vow that I would, you know, that I would, that the beings are numberless and I vow to save them like forever. So, of course, another difficulty has arisen. So for climate change, of course, that really makes sense. It's so complex. There's so many things that are happening and are going to keep happening. We can't possibly imagine that we're going to just sort it all out with something. So the difficulties will keep arising. The next one is don't be attached to outcomes. Good or bad, just don't be attached to outcomes. If your action results in a good outcome, that is very nice. It's not fantastic, that's amazing, it went the way I wanted to. Much better just, great, that is good. That is good. You know, you can feel good, but not over the top good. Just that's good. And then just as equally, it's exactly the same the other way. When things don't go well, we don't have to collapse in a heap about it. We can just go, oh yeah, it didn't work. It didn't go so well. And, the next one is expand your definition of self, which was the topic of a talk I gave two talks ago, expanding our definition of self. And for climate change, I think this is particularly helpful, because often if we're thinking we really need to sort of like save the human race or save our civilization, that might not be what happens. And then that we would be extremely disappointed if that's how we identify as the human race. If we identify too strongly with that, then if it starts to look like that's not going to happen, we're going to get very, possibly very distressed. But if we expand that definition to be all the plants and animals of the world, in every little spot that you can imagine, and that if the work that we do results in some of them making it, that is a fantastic thing. If we expand our definition of self enough, then we can actually be really, really happy about that. We can feel, not really, really happy, just quite happy. We can be happy that our efforts in ways that we can't understand and we'll never be able to prove it, but that our efforts may have been the difference between that species surviving or not surviving. That plant, that little grass, that little piece of moss, that particular species got to survive maybe because of our efforts. And then the next one is that cause and effect applies absolutely to everything that we do. Everything that we do has an effect. And I would imagine that for most of us here, we're having good effects most of the time. Occasionally we're making mistakes. Most of the time we're probably having good effects. And they can just be tiny things that are having good effects. Like Jenny brought some tomatoes and bell peppers and some flowers the other day from the farm that she lives on, the organic farm. When she did that, my sense is that she's really thinking about the earth. This is organic food, and if people take this for calories, then they don't have to go to the grocery store and by food that's packaged and has been transported and all of those things, in a tiny little way, that's just being a benefit to the earth. So her doing that is being a benefit to the earth. And although it might not look like it, that is actually saving all beings. That's actually saving all beings, because that little tomato is connected to every other thing in the whole, on the whole earth, the whole solar system, and the whole universe, and so on and so forth. So her little action is actually saving all beings. And the people who go, oh look, tomatoes and bell peppers. I don't really feel like eating tomatoes or bell peppers, but I'll make something with them anyway, some lentils maybe. And that will save me from going to the grocery store and buying more packaged food. So that person's saving all beings when they say, oh yes, I'll take those things. And then the flowers that get left over, we'll break them up and put them in the composting system, and that's saving all beings. And then the next one is, any capacities that we have to be of benefit is only because of the kindness of others. So my capacity to find some energy to be involved with Extinction Rebellion, the only reason I can do that is because all the kindness that has been given to me, all the skillful care that has been given to me. That's the only reason. There's actually zero other reason. And that can be very helpful if people are feeling a little bit arrogant, like, I know all about climate change and this person has no idea. When we have a thought like that, this can really help us feel a lot more humble. Like, no, it's only because of all the gifts that I've received that have come together to cause me to be who I am, that I can do anything that I'm doing. And that applies to every single one of us. So if someone's faltering, you can, without being patronizing at all, think about all the things that they have received and maybe some of the things that they didn't receive. And then the last one of this list is to leave nothing out. So leave nothing out in every aspect of what we're doing. So in relation to, say, climate activism, that would mean not to have any ill feelings to anything or anyone. I think it's kind of okay to not be happy about systems. We can say this system is a destructive system and we need to dismantle this system. I think that's fine. We don't have to have any hatred or malice when we do that, because it's not directed at a person, it's just directed at the arrangement of things. This arrangement is not good for the earth. Pulling out fossil fuels, and so on and so forth. Having an economic system that is based on infinite growth on a finite planet is just not a good system. So I think we can be, it's okay to not feel so good about that. But we don't even want to leave that out. We want to be able to really be curious and open about all the systems, but particularly all the beings in the systems. We have to have, we don't have to, but if we want to be effective, all of us need to work together if we're going to get through this crisis in whatever way we get through it. It has to be community, caring and drawing people in. We need to be able to love the people who we perceive are doing the harm. We need to love them and listen to them. One thing that we do in the climate actions, well, I've been more involved in the meditations that we've been doing, so public meditating, is when having a conversation with someone, just not to do any disagreeing with them and not to do any arguing, just really listen openly and open-heartedly to that person. Just do that. And that's what a lot of people do we often just call it XR, Santa Cruz, instead of Extinction Rebellion. A lot of people in XR do that as part of, you know, we've got a sort of set of guidelines. The guidelines is to include everybody. Don't be angry at anyone. Just be a good listener. Try and understand without being patronizing. So there's a koan in this collection. It's called the Miscellaneous Collection. And so this is case number 7 in the Miscellaneous Koan Collection. You find yourself in a stone grave. There are no windows, and the door is locked from the outside. How will you get out? So you find yourself in a stone grave. There are no windows, and the door is locked from the outside. How will you get out? So if we just put ourselves in that situation, it feels like there's three pretty obvious types of options. There's calling out, hello, is anybody there? I'm stuck in here, please help me out. Can someone like unlock the door? There's that response. There's, I shall just sit here and be at ease. That's another response. And then another one would be, this is not fair, I shouldn't be stuck in here, and just expending vast amounts of energy in a futile sort of fashion. So the first two options, calling out and sitting calmly, they're the kinds of actions that we need to be doing. There's going to be times when the right thing to do is to call out, is to shout out, try and change things, try and have an impact in the physical world, try and have an impact. I don't want to die right now, I want to get out. I don't want you to die right now, I'm going to try and help. And then we can alternate between that kind of sort of vigorous action with, okay, stuck in this grave, seems to be no way out. Total acceptance, total ease. And if we can move back and forth between these two sorts of energies, to call them that, two different ways of engaging with the world, two different forms of appropriate response, then we won't get burnt out. And we can just skip that whole one of it's not fair, banging on the walls. We can just skip that one. That one doesn't benefit anybody. So I want to sort of talk a little differently now. We've been doing a class with Kokyo on Sunday mornings on the Mahaparinirvana Sutra about no self and true self. But kind of in the preface or the lead up before going into that sutra as much, we've been looking at just the conventional self. So this is the self that's here, got a body, you're all there. We've each got bodies, we've got histories, we've got feelings, we can see, we can hear, just this conventional self. And we can kind of break this conventional self up into two parts. There's the conventional self that is healthy and wholesome and that we need. That's the one that would be shouting, hey, I'm stuck in here, can someone please let me out? That one. As Kokyo said, the one that brushes their teeth so that they won't get cavities next year, hopefully not get cavities next year, that's the conventional self that we need to look after. And we just have it. Here it is. We've got this conventional self. And then there's this other self, which we could call the illusory, what's the other words for it? Problematic, false self. And I'll talk about that one in a minute. So this conventional self, we give it a name, which is very convenient. Like my name is Nettie, and my name's also Antoinette, and it's also Mushin. And I've noticed it's kind of interesting having three different names, because when someone asks me my name, I go like, where am I? I'm at work. This is my name. I'm in the Zendo. This is my name. different situations have a different name. It's kind of nice. It's not so automatic. I just have a moment to reflect. Oh, yeah. So we give it a name, but just because it makes it easier. Makes it easier to not say, you know, the guy who comes on the bike, he parks it over there, that guy. It's just easier to say Brian. So we just say Brian. Okay. But this self that appears very particular isn't quite as solid as it seems. And a term that I really liked that Kokyo brought to the class that he heard from Mark Sideris, who's the author of Buddhism in Philosophy, is that we are a causal series. A causal series. And the metaphor of a river, I think, is a fantastic one for this. So if we think of the San Lorenzo River, it's very clear that it's the San Lorenzo River. It's not River Street. It's not Water Street. It's the San Lorenzo River. We understand it, but that's what it is. We can look at it, and it looks like that river, and pretty much everyone's in agreement. But there isn't a piece of it that we can pick up and call the San Lorenzo River. We can't scoop it up and bring it into our house. We can't put it in a box. It's this constant flow of water. And this constant flow of water, as we move further up the river, we see that that water is kind of like sliding down the slopes, and maybe it's bubbling up from springs as well. And then we trace that a little further, and it's falling from the sky. And those clouds formed because some trees somewhere else were transpiring moisture up. And so it just keeps on going on like that. But the bit that's related to the conventional self is that all of those things happen, and then they culminate in this particular stream, this causal series. Just like what I was saying before about everything is a gift, that I can only do what I can do because of what's been given to me. That's another way of talking about this. All those things that happened flowed into the river. We can't possibly track them. We can't name them all. There's far too many. Like all the droplets that go into that San Lorenzo River, we just couldn't possibly identify them. Same goes into creating this particular causal series. So it all kind of comes together, and then at a certain point it goes, oh, look, there's Nettie. Well, there's Anita. She's arrived. I think she brought cookies tonight. It comes together, and we give it a name, and we call it something. But it's not a thing. And so when we understand ourselves as this causal series, and so, so importantly, and it happens, I think, automatically, that if we see ourselves as a causal series, then we see other people as causal series as well. And when we see everybody as just a causal series, just a series of things that came together and appear to be in this one coherent kind of form, when we see it like that, we're much, much less likely to have aversive feelings towards it. Because it's not a thing that we can say, I do not like you. It's kind of harder to do that, like the streams going past. It's like, I don't like the water. Oh my God, it's already gone. It's kind of harder to catch on to it and dislike it if you keep on reminding yourself that it's not an actual thing. So that can be, I think, particularly helpful for climate activists, because so often fear is one of the things that most often, I think, pulls us into that deluded dualistic thinking of I am here and you are there. And I don't know if there's any quicker way to make a person feel extremely solid than to threaten their existence in some way, threaten their comfort in some way. So if you're involved in things like climate activism, there's going to be lots of moments where someone will come up with some anger toward you, and there'll be that moment in which it'll be very important to remember. We're both just rivers. We're just rivers. just softens everything. So a sentence to describe what this conventional self is, that's perfectly healthy and good and that we absolutely need, is that it is a convenient name for a causal series of mind-body experiences. So although that sounds sort of pretty abstract, and it would be a little bit hard to pull that into your mind instantly in the middle of a potential argument, oh my God, I just have to remember that we're a convenient name for a causal series of mind-body experiences, that would be pretty hard, but you could just quickly remember that something like it's just a flowing thing going on here. Whatever words work for you, you could bring that to mind. And to do that in a difficult situation means that you need to practice, that we need to practice it in not difficult situations, like when we're sitting on the porch, or when we're cooking, or when we're driving, and we can practice in mildly aversive situations, when we're annoyed at some little thing, fantastic opportunity to practice. So this other self that's not very useful to us, and the whole reason I'm thinking about the word self is because we just use the word self so much in Zen. So it's good for us to know which self we're referring to. I'm not going to talk about this tonight, but the sort of true self or no self, the conventional self that we've just discussed, and then the false, illusory, problematic self. And really all that self is the conventional self who has made the error of identifying with themselves as truly being there. As soon as we do that identification, then we've started to concretize ourselves. And if we do it with other, and it's the same with the other. If we do it to ourselves, if we have this sense of ourselves as a separate, discrete entity, then we're going to be doing that with other people too. Because it's a pattern of mind, it's a pattern of thinking, it's a way of interpreting things. So this was a nice thing that we talked about in our Sunday morning class, that this false illusory problem self sees itself as independent, singular and separate, as the owner, controller and manager of the causal series. You can just feel how like the weight and the burden of that. I am the owner, the controller and the manager of this causal series. It's a heavy, heavy burden. And to put that on another person, you are at fault because you made the mistake. And I think if we do function from that perspective too much of the time, we end up with this sort of like entrenched, low-grade, niggling feeling of unsatisfactoriness. And then I've written this sentence here. This static atomic view is the source of all our troubles. All right. I was going to read something, but I think I prefer to see if we want to have some conversation. Let me just see if there was something else I really, really wanted to say. Oh, I just want to read one more case. This is case 15 in the miscellaneous collection. The leaves of the lotus are round, round, rounder than a mirror. The edge of the water nut is sharp, sharp, sharper than an awl. When the wind blows, the willow seed floats away. When the wind beats on the peach blossoms, a butterfly flies up. So the first bit, the leaves of the lotus are round, round, rounder than a mirror. I don't know if any of you have I'm sure some of you have been to the lake in San Lorenzo Park and seen the lotus flowers. Just phenomenal. And the leaves of the lotus, they're kind of this soft and round, sort of pinky yellow and white. They're so soft and beautiful. Sometimes it's like that. Sometimes our day is like that. The edge of the water nut is sharp, sharp, sharper than an awl. An awl is that sort of cutting tool, a curved cutting tool. And this water nut, I remember I looked it up once, it's got a sharp point, like, ouch! Really would hurt if you accidentally pricked your finger on it or if you stood on it. And life's like that sometimes too. Ouch! Ouch! Sharp, sharp, sharper than an awl. The whole climate change, climate crisis, that's what that is. It's very sharp. It's painful. When the wind blows, the willow seed floats away. So this next couplet, the first ones are describing sort of the beautiful manifestation of the thing. The lotus flower, the water nut. This one is a relationship. The wind blows and the willow seed floats away. And our life is like that. It's all in relationship all the time. And this image has a sense of growth. Like the seed blows away and we don't know what's gonna grow. We don't know what's gonna come next. Our actions are like that. We do things. We don't know what good it's gonna do. We just don't know. But it's a wonderful thing. When the rain beats on the peach blossoms, a butterfly flies up. So that's a little more, just slightly more complicated and a little bit more difficult. Big raindrops falling down, they're very big for a butterfly. Raindrops, like they're as big as the body of a butterfly. Boom, boom, hitting the blossoms and the butterfly flies up. So that's our response. It's how we can respond to this climate crisis like that butterfly. So, would anyone like to ask or comment on anything? Joyce. Well, if you had broken wings and you couldn't fly off, then I think that would be a very appropriate response. But if you can fly off and care for your body, and care for the body of others, then it's probably a better idea to fly off. Yeah. I think that's really important that we find the balance between taking action and being in acceptance of something that we can't change. Or sometimes we can just be temporarily in acceptance while we gather our energy to see if there is something more we could do. Like maybe we shout out for 10 minutes, we get very tired, so then we move into acceptance. Which is maybe a little different to giving up, because giving up has a sense of it's premature. You know, if you give up when there's hope for something better, then that maybe isn't quite so compassionate towards our own body to do that. But if there is no other option, then being in acceptance is the most compassionate thing we could do and will give us mental ease if we do that. And I think the trick or the difficulty is that we can never know exactly Where that line is, we just don't know. We just have to be humble about that. We just don't know. We just do our best.
I guess I read how it came across that there was resignation, immediate resignation.
About the climate?
In that tomb.
Oh, in that tomb. Oh, that's my error if that came across that way.
Probably my interpretation, but acceptance prematurely.
Right. Yes. Definitely don't do that. And I know you wouldn't, because I've seen your tenacity, Joyce. Richard.
I would like to combine those two ideas of acceptance and action and say effort without desire, so that there's a sense of you do without requiring result, or even if there's a sense of
yes, I think that's right. Sometimes we just have to be dignified.
Right. Oh, yes.
We just do it. Well, yeah. That's like the great artists do that. The great conflagration, there's no hope, and they sing.
Mm. Exactly. Yeah.
Ziggy? Okay, I'm going to repeat it for the recording. So this is from Ziggy as a way to remember the problematic self. Piss. Perfect.
Personal.
Oh, personal. Sorry, not perfect. Personal.
Independent.
Separate.
Singular.
So
when I get in that frame of mind, that's not a good place.
No. I'm so glad that you brought that up, because the thing I didn't say that I had on my list is to ask ourselves the question, what is the error in my thinking at the moment? Whenever our thinking is unpleasant for us, what is the error in my thinking at the moment? And I think we'll always end up coming to piss. That's fine. That's good. We'll end up realizing that we have got this idea that we are this separate, independent self. This false illusory self will make that mistake. I think every time.
Yeah.
Shakti.
It's interesting because I've been like spiraling towards this idea of living in community more and more, and maybe it's just being open to the sense of what is right for the planet, but right for us as individuals. I think that we there's just too much separation.
Yeah.
We all have to have our separate houses and fences up between our houses. And, and I think that kind of living is what needs to change too, because there's so much resources that are used when we have our own separate everything.
Yes, and that is one of the strong calls of Extinction Rebellion, is to move into smaller communities, working closely and building relationships, not having it being materially oriented, but rather being relationally oriented and producing just what you need for yourself and not more. That's kind of part. It's, I would say, I can't see that there's any other way than that way. How that actually looks, no, none of us can know for sure, but moving into that. So I'm a little aware of time. I think maybe we should finish. Thank you. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow.